It's time for Intersections, where art and science meet, your weekly hour of conversation, where you learn about curious ideas, creative works, and interesting phenomena with your host, Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, and Krista Hoffman-Longton, Assistant Dean for Faculty Affairs and Professional Development at the Indiana University School of Medicine. Now, it's time for Intersections, where art and science meet.
I'm Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, where we create a museum without walls so artists, scientists, and the community can create unique interactions and conversations. And in today's conversation, we're going to be talking about how drawing engages different parts of the brain and allows an archaeologist to highlight specific aspects of an excavation. It is interesting that archaeologists can use simple sketches to record spatial relationships of different layers or features or artifacts. And with us today for this conversation is Dr. Alex Elvis-Badillo. Welcome, Alex.
Hello, it's good to be back.
Yeah, it's great. Alex is archaeological and assistant professor in the Department of Earth and Environmental Systems at Indiana State University. And I also have two other great guests with us. I have Dr. Jordan Rogers. And Jordan, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm a visiting assistant professor of classics at Carleton College in Minnesota, and also one of the excavation supervisors on the Pompeii 114 archaeological project.
Wow, that'll be exciting. I'll actually want to talk about that a little bit, too. And I also have Mary Evelyn. Why don't you introduce yourself as well?
Sure. I'm Mary Evelyn Ferrier. I'm a PhD candidate right now, finishing up at Columbia University, where I work on Roman archaeology and history. I am also an excavation supervisor at Pompeii, but I have extensive excavation experience in Rome, Sicily, and also in Peru.
Wow. So I came up with this idea to do this show because I was reading through really an advertisement for an app called Concepts. And they were talking about all three of you. In fact, you're all three in the article. And they were talking about the idea of using an iPad, in this case, and the pencil to be able to draw, to overlay over the top of things, to do all that. And so I'm curious, what got you to start drawing in that way? What initially got you guys to think that that would be a useful tool?
Well, we decided to adopt this iPad approach for this project because about a decade before, they had used iPads in this kind of, groundbreaking way there at Pompeii at the Porta Savia project. And we were kind of wanting to replicate that, but then take it even beyond. And so we developed a whole digital workflow to record all of the data, and part of that is to be able to record sketches. Archaeologists are constantly, we're constantly recording everything possible. I mean, this all we have is the materials that we have in front of us in order to tell the story. And so part of that is recording attribute data and text and being able to describe things, but also being able to draw and record how things look visually. And so we decided to take that digitally and use this application called Concepts on the iPad so that we could draw stuff and sketch it as we would on paper, but it would easily be able to export and we could work with it in a digital format and actually create figures in a much faster way. So that's, I mean, you guys, maybe Jordan and Mary Evelyn want to chime in here, but that's part of how I view drawing in archaeology. It's part of the whole suite of data collection that we try to do in the field.
Yeah. So I have been on past projects that use the iPad kind of in the way Alex suggested, which is really using it just to record data that you can enter through a keyboard or through the keyboard on the iPad, but still having to draw manually, which can lead to so many problems. Of course, this is how it's been done for centuries prior, kind of as you suggested, trying to draw on this notebook. But it not only takes a lot longer, but it can include a lot more mistakes. A lot of times you're dealing with you know, a notebook that just has tons and tons of like little fingerprints from the dirt and has a bunch of like eraser marks, and you have no idea what's really going on. And you don't want to label something necessarily because you might need that for, you know, the documentation. So I was quite nervous. I think Jordan and I kind of both were going into this because we had never done something like this in terms of drawing on concepts in this way to record. And I think there's always that initial nervousness of, ooh, you know, I'm used to having my notebook and my pencil, and that's kind of the way I've done it. But I think we were both really shocked in that it only took us about a day, kind of like a day and a half or 2 days of like kind of us playing with concepts in the field. Once Allison had told us this and we had the iPads and we're out there in Pompeii, and it was an incredibly easy and really intuitive transition for us, and also just made it really, I think, kind of reinvigorated the importance of drawing in my own analysis, just because like I am able to make a lot more notes, but also I feel much more confident in my drawings because we are able to, you know, they're gridded to the real world. And so if we take a measurement between two things within concepts, that does match the reality that we see before us in the trench.
Wow. Jordan?
Yeah. So I'll just echo what Mev said about being pretty nervous about using it in the field, because similarly, my experience was pen and paper. And my experience both in Romania and another site in Italy was that we were drawing to record and not necessarily to interpret. And I think that's a traditional technique that, you know, still lives on. What's really cool about the workflow that Alex and his team is established for our project is that all of that recording through the iPad and also through the 3D modeling that's done, that gives us really incredible data capture and also really incredible data granularity. So we don't really have to worry now with our drawings about being perfect, right? We can start imagining that the drawings are there to help us actually interpret things. And that is freeing in some ways, because when you're in the field with pen and paper, you want to get all the measurements correct, and you want to make sure that like, all the corners are of this one really angular rock that you have perfectly represented. Well, the model does that so much better. So I think for me, I think once I got over the nervousness of using a new app, getting comfortable with it, and then also in putting it to use, I think by the end of our season, and Mary Evelyn, you probably have some thoughts about this too, but I felt by the end I was doing more interesting things with the app than just drawing what was there, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. So starting to mess around with some of the other tools, of course you can amend things really easily on the concepts app, right? So there's an eraser, but it doesn't leave a mark, which is nice. But thinking about the coloring, shading, some other tools, and really, really utilizing it in some new ways that I wouldn't have done with a pen and paper.
So that what I love about all this is that, and I didn't know this really, a part of archaeology was drawing. And I guess I knew that people in the past gridded things out and, you know, identified where something was found, and that, but I didn't realize you used it as an investigative tool as well. Alex?
I was just going to say, you know, we're obsessed with recording spatial relationships when it comes to archaeology, and part of that is drawing. So if we need to, let's say we're excavating a room, we need to make sure that we map everything in that room, whether it's a relational sketch where we can see things in relation to one another spatially, or if it's something kind of like we were doing on the iPads, and that's really measuring things out and making things to scale so it's more of a true scale map. But yeah, if we don't record that spatial context, we might lose information. You know, if we find, you know, a projectile point in a certain location underneath a body versus off to the side in the corner of the room, that says two different things.
Go ahead. I was just going to also add that even though, of course, we have the advancement of images and photographs, it's actually really hard to capture different things happening in the soil and the dirt in photographs. And I think all of us have experienced taking a photograph in the field, completely understanding it, and then you go back home and you have no idea what's going on. And So I think the drawings have really been critical in the past, you know, even manually, but also now, just to really capture what we are thinking in terms of the relationships between these stratigraphic deposits, between these things that are happening in the soil.
Yeah, and I know you guys do take photographs too to document, but I think that you're right about photography, because I do photography as well. And what I realize about it is that it's way more two-dimensional than you would think a drawing is, because in the drawing you can fake the three-dimensionality, right? And the other is that it is really flat, not only just in the dimensions, but it's also cluttered. And so it's hard in a photograph, unless you can take the object out, which you can't, put it on a dark background and shoot it by itself. You can't, but you can isolate it. And I get what you're saying. You can isolate it using a drawing. Also, when you were talking, I love the idea when you were talking, Mary Evelyn, about being able to put text or not put text. And Jordan, you were talking about being, I have to forego certain things because I have to use it somewhere else. I would think with it being digital, you can alter that then later. You can remove a text layer that you needed for the description, but if you wanted it then for photo, you want to describe how that's helpful to you.
Sure, yeah. Before I get into that, I realize I had one more thing to add I forget, which is the fact that the other thing about photographs is that you kind of brought up just now, is the fact that even if you take a picture, it's so rare that we're actually, you know, right on top of the trench, especially when we're dealing with these big trenches. Right. So there is going to be some distortion, and you can't rely on the photograph to give you an accurate measurement between two things, or really give you an honest perspective of these things. So that's another reason why the drawing can be so critical, and in particular, these concepts drawings, where we can check the measurements and double check them and use them for reference later. But for the concepts app, the thing that was great for both of us is the fact that you can make these different layers that sit on top of each other and hide them or change their opacity or all these different things. So I think we kind of all realize that, like, we might make a drawing but have three or four different layers, you know, one of which is kind of our own commentary or text, you know, or arrows pointing like this is actually this, or clarifying it, maybe another that actually has the labels, the documentation numbers that we use for noting these different deposits, or color. So I got really into using the color, but I didn't always want the color necessarily in the final images. And of course, you can take the grid on and off on concepts. So it added just a ton of flexibility, and it was really just a matter of at the end selecting what we wanted visible and then exporting that. But concepts made it so easy because we could save everything, you know, in these drawings.
Yeah, and preserves the layers.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just like, that's exactly talking, because you guys work in layers anyway. As you come down, you tend to work very slowly coming down. Reveal something, right?
And it's and that was another great thing, because we also are doing very advanced things with photogrammetry in our dig, but these things also take time to process. So it was pretty nice in the field, like in the first week before we had enough data to actually do anything for the models, the photogrammetry models, that I was able to kind of look at two drawings and realize that the hole that we had found on one layer as we excavated actually had kind of, you know, shifted in a certain direction. So it also allows us to compare by taking these drawings together. It was operating, like you're saying, in these layers as we excavate.
Go ahead.
I was just going to, I wanted to highlight the idea about sharing in archaeology, and that is something that is oftentimes a challenge, sharing ideas, information, mm-hmm. Not just within a group, which part of sketching and drawing helps us do that. It's a complex, you know, process, the excavation, and then is a complex idea of maybe thinking through this layering and sequencing of events that may have occurred in the past. But being able to put those lines on a page, whether digital or physical, and then showing that to your colleague and having a conversation about it is key. And so one of the challenges that I've dealt with in digital archaeology is trying to facilitate sharing of ideas between archaeologists, the 3D models, making them accessible to everybody in the project, but then also information coming out of our sketches. I mean, that's kind of part of it. So that's the importance of drawing is also just getting those ideas out on the page and actually being able to share that with your colleagues too.
Yeah, and it's not like using the artificial intelligence in this case, it's using the intelligence of other archaeologists when you share it, right? And
exactly.
It's human intelligence that you're looking at a juxtaposition, which is hard to teach AI to be able mm-hmm. to do. Mm-hmm. But that's the human aspect of that sharing, right?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, for me, in making the when you draw something, you're making a decision about what it looks like, right? And yeah. I think Mary Evelyn mentioned this about the soil texture and color. And so it's not at all obvious unless you're right there and then you can feel it, what a different stratigraphic unit might be, and especially not in a photograph and not in a 3D model. So just in making the drawing in the first place is that that is you deciding what it looks like in some instances so that you can share it, of course, which is the ultimate goal, is so we can communicate what we think we're seeing in the field. Because of course, right, once we get into it, once we take it away, then it's gone forever, right? So that's our recording that we really need to be able to show our process, what we think is happening as we're excavating these trenches.
Yeah, so that isolation, like we've talked about, right? You're choosing that with your eye and your brain.
Right.
What do you exactly, think is important, right?
I don't think if you fed a photograph into ChatGPT or whatever, GPT-4, no. Wherever we're at right now, I don't
interpret
think
it. No.
Do much with it, you know?
No, and I love that. Go ahead.
I was going to say that I think we're all getting at the fact that archaeology is actually despite being a very systematic method and science, is actually an incredibly subjective experience. And it's something that, you know, we're using our individual senses as people, you know, we're using our eyes, we're using touch, rarely smell, although, you know, I have excavated some weird cisterns that also offer that. But the thing is, like, we're all kind of interpreting these different stimuli of these different layers in this highly personal way. So it's kind of like Alex and Jordan were saying, where you have to find a way to express this and communicate this to other people. And drawings offer this way of capturing a lot of our individual experiences of the layers and of the soil.
Wow. I wanted to mention something here about another function of the drawing, at least in projects I've worked on, but also I think maybe Jordan and Mev could speak to this a little bit and maybe share your experience with it. But the drawing, the moment of sketching in archaeology takes time, and it kind of slows things down, and it allows for you to actually kind of think through what you're doing, what you're seeing, developing new questions, right? Developing new ideas about how things are progressing with the excavation. And I think the critique on my own, you know, digital archaeologists and us as a group, you know, we want to use all this fancy, you know, technology, structure for motion, photogrammetry, LiDAR embedded into our iPads and scan stuff. And it's great. And it does a job really well and efficiently and quickly. But as we continue to accelerate the pace of data collection, we are losing something. And I think that's something that the sketch actually allows us to put back in. You know, we can still sketch digitally and we can record it that way, but we need to put the time back in archaeology. These aren't new ideas. This is actually something that archaeologists have been looking at in the last, you know, 10 years. It's actually an archaeologist by the name of Bill Carraher in the 2010s. You know, he's coming out with this idea of slowing archaeology down because we have accelerated the pace using these technologies in such a way that we've lost this, or we are losing it and we're in danger of it. So it does, it kind of pulls people back into, you know, really experiencing that process. And I actually am curious if Mary Evelyn Jordan, if you guys felt that this was a moment during the day at which you could reflect on the excavation as it was happening.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead, Mary Evelyn.
No, you go ahead.
Okay. Once the workflow became routine and I got comfortable in it and really settled in, Then I think yes, absolutely. And it was a moment to reflect on things and actually and again start thinking about what's actually happening and just slow it down, decompress my brain and let it think, as opposed to just collect. So yeah, for me that's absolutely the case. I mean, it did take a little bit of time to get to that point where I wasn't just trying to get a drawing, because we're moving fast. We need to get this data, and of course. With new tools come, you know, learning curves and everything. But I mean, luckily, as Mary Ellen was saying, it's a pretty intuitive app. But really, the limitation is in my creativity and what I can do, what I think I can do with it. But yeah, absolutely, it was a nice thing to return to at the end of the day, especially if I had made maybe a quick sketch. I still have thoughts about what's happening, and I can go back and start messing around with different layers and start thinking about comparisons between the different stratigraphic units. And it was quite nice.
So your sketches, they were starting in the field and then you would spend time with them later at night.
So I would make sure, right, that we could capture, because we have to capture points still. We have to know where things are so we can map them onto the grid. So we're capturing points and getting more or less the shape of things. Which is to say, that's not really a moment where I'm interpreting things. I'm just getting the points and making sure that everything that I think is there is on my sketch. But at the end of the day, when I'm adding text and thinking about relationships and really adding more detail to the sketches, and if some of these sketches can get really detailed, in fact, in trying to communicate what's happening, that was sort of later in the day kind of thing. I don't know how your process was, Mary Evelyn.
Yeah, actually, you raised a good point that I hadn't really thought to talk about, which is the fact that my drawing style has changed through concepts and this ability to use layers, because basically you take a bunch of points and then you kind of connect the dots, essentially. And that's what we were kind of talking about. There's a lot of erasing. There's a lot of like pencil fragments. You know, you need a sharpener, whatever, like, before when we were trying to draw this. But with concepts, it's great because I can, you know, just do the dots on one layer, you know, maybe go back and double check that. And then at another time, just simply add another layer, kind of connect those dots, go back to the trench, double check it. So yeah, I think I had a very similar kind of workflow to Jordan in terms of making these points, because our field season is, even though it is 5 weeks, it goes by incredibly fast and feels very short. So our time feels very precious in that I think both of us kind of operated with getting the essential points that we needed for the drawings and then letting our excavators continue to dig. Now in terms of the drawing slowing us down, yeah, I think I'm someone that I actually am like, oh, I need to do a drawing. Like when I finish an SU, because I see the next layer and I'm like, oh, I really want to start digging it, because I think I just get excited about what's there next. And I took the photo, I've done something in the database, and so I feel ready. And then I need to sit down. But I think part of my dread for the drawings is also just the fact that it requires a lot of mental work in terms of analysis, and it forces you to really think through things where, you know, sometimes when you're in the middle of the day and it's hot, you're like, oh, I don't think I'm actually capable of thinking through this right now. But that's why it's also great, because it forces you to continue to process these things and really articulate what you're thinking, even if unwilling. In my case, it is very effective. And I of course, ultimately really liked the drawing and I got really into it and had fun with it. But it does ask a lot of the person interpreting and drawing.
Yeah, and that's the point, right?
Absolutely.
That is the point of slowing it down. And, you know, I take, through DaVinci Pursuit, I take people now on journaling walks to understand nature more and the science of it. And so, you know, we bring in the science along with it. But what I find is that people will spend time looking at things they never would have looked at. So, you know, the old way of working with students that I use sometimes is just a hoop ring that's 12 inches, and I'll have them toss it down on the ground and then go with magnifiers and go look and sketch what they see.
That's cool.
Which you wouldn't think that, you know, random adults who just signed up for a walk want to do, but they get so involved, you know, looking at the tiny, tiny things like that are in there, little roots, you know, the moss and all that. And they really don't want to break away from it because they're mentally engaged. It isn't so much about their artwork. And then, you know, they're putting little notes, and I can sense what this is doing with you all, that you're not only slowing down, but I also think you're processing. So it's twofold. It's to get you to stop long enough to use your mind more. Am I right on that analysis?
I would say for sure. And I feel like we need to kind of talk a little bit outside of the excavation and how sketching and drawing does just this. Right. Some of my work is in doing settlement pattern survey and walking the lands and looking for sites and mapping sites. And oftentimes we use sketches as during that process as well. But it does slow things down and allow us to process, but it also, in my work doing survey, it allows me a moment to have a conversation with local guides, you know, people that know that area and know that history. And that's where I've found the moment to sketch as being super helpful in the field. So we'll sit, you know, on a hilltop and we'll look around and I'll be sketching the landscape and, you know, different hilltops, different places where the land comes down and different rivers and such. And as I'm sketching it, I can ask questions. You know, I can listen to what they're telling me. I can make sure that I sketch in, you know, something very unique that person was describing, or at least write that down. But it also allows for that conversation to happen. And then back into the excavation, I don't know about Mary Evelyn and Jordan, if you ever experienced this in the traditional drawing sense, back when we'd put dots on paper and map this out. But always did that with a partner, you know, somebody who's helping to hold the line level and measure with the rulers. And it became more of a collaborative drawing where we're working together to interpret and draw that. But that also was like conversation happening there as we're doing the sketch in archaeology.
Yeah, I would say I definitely utilized, I felt like my drawings, especially towards the end of the seasons, felt much more collaborative, and that I would, especially as my, because we were training all our excavators at the site during the season. And I think last year, everyone was a first time excavator, actually. So especially once we got towards the middle and end of the season, I was definitely engaging and asking our undergrads to come join me in this process of taking these measurements, because even though we're using the iPad and it's very efficient in many ways, you still need another person just to kind of double check and hold these, hold the measuring tape or whatever you might be using, the plumb bob, et cetera. So there is still this method of collaboration, I feel like, in these digs that is in the iPad that is being preserved still, yeah.
Yeah, and I would agree. It was a four-person job, one person holding one end of the tape, another person holding the other end of the tape, and then a third person holding the plumb bob to take the point, and they're choosing to some extent where that's going to be, right? And then a fourth person, typically me, with the iPad, actually drawing the point. And of course, all of those steps, right? Those are human steps, and individuals working together, individuals making their own little choices and doing so. So again, I'm stressing with the subjective part of it, because it really is, there is an art to it that we should acknowledge, because it's not, you know, if we just let, it's not just a machine recording or something like that. It really is, you have to be there and experience it as an individual and within your trench as a collaborative project.
Yeah, and you're interpreting things that really, I don't know how to say it other than, you know, if I'm a biologist or I'm a particularly like a chemist, I can see what's there, and it kind of confirms what, you know, it's already there in the body of literature and stuff. For you all, interpretations change because they were human based. And so you guys having a chat with people near you, what's the context? What was here? You commenting with each other and somebody saying, no, I think it needs to be a little more over there. Or will you get me a measurement over here? That collaborative thing is so critical to your work as archaeologists, because you still are always trying to base it on what do I, you know, there's some things we know, but also what is it? The context helps you to understand what might I be seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were constantly going to each other's trenches and say, hey, can you come look at this? Just give me your opinion on it. And while I'm here, if you have anything I can give an opinion on, that'd be great. But also Pompeii is fantastic because there's such a concentration of projects, right? So it's pretty typical to have other teams that are working in a different part of the site come to our site and ask what we have going on, ask questions about if we found X, Y, or Z. And of course, for us to go out and do the same thing. And so that because Pompeii is such a really dense site for archaeology, we can do that, right? So it's not just collaboration among the group of our project, but also between the projects. And that's been really fun because it's not an experience I had before that, where typically we're really isolated sort of in the middle of nowhere, where we don't have a bigger archaeological community to collaborate with.
It's really interesting. I've been talking with our guests about how they use the arts, particularly drawing and modern technology through an iPad and apps, to improve the way in which they see things as archaeologists. And we'll be right back after this short break.
This is Jürgen Jungbauer from the Heidelberg House on Pendleton Pike here in Indianapolis. Join me this Sunday for German Music Hour. And even if you don't speak the language, I hope you enjoy the music and the rhythm and the beat on this radio station every Sunday at 1 o'clock. It's only here on 88.7 WICR.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Kiesling, and today we're having a conversation with our guests about how drawing engages different parts of the brain and allows an archaeologist to highlight specific aspects of an excavation. And right before we went to the break, I know that there was the talk about drawing and seeing and thinking. And I know, Mary Evelyn, you had some other thoughts and ideas about that.
Yes. So we've been talking about how excavation is, or how the drawings can be incredibly collaborative. And how, you know, Jordan's had involved four people for the drawing. And the other thing about that is you have to be really good at communication when you're doing these drawings in the trench, because we are dealing with really small spaces. And in this case, lots of different sets of hands that might have different, you know, opinions or ideas of where an SU ends or begins. And in addition to that, like we're saying, it's really hot. We want to move on sometimes. And so I think it is kind of this team building exercise when you do these drawings together too, because you just have to be really good at it. It almost feels like Twister, like, okay, put your right hand here and then measure down or something like that. And that's not it. Like to the left a little bit. Okay, that's good. Like, oh, are you sure that number's correct? Let's double check it or whatever. So we have to kind of work really as a team for that. But the other thing Jordan brought up too is the fact that there are so many different projects happening at Pompeii, which makes it a really unique experience for an archaeologist, because these different teams are coming from different archaeological traditions. Like one of the projects closest to us is all Italian archaeologists from Italian universities. There's a Spanish project from a Spanish university, and we all have our own different methodologies or different approaches to things. So I remember it was really interesting when I went, a small example, when I went to the Italian project and they were using kind of like index cards with SU number, with the numbers that we use for the soil, kind of like pinned up actually, like physically in the architecture or in the soil. And it's just these kind of small things. And of course, like drawing being one of them, that show all of our different approaches and methodologies. And so Pompeii is this kind of great study space for the multiplicity of approaches that is being used today for excavations.
Yeah, and then I assume all those approaches can be collated together to get even a bigger picture. So you like that diversity of approach is probably really, really helpful.
Totally, yes. And it was also nice that I think our approach, everyone was like, ooh, like a lot of oohing and aahing over iPad drawings. And so
of course.
Very smug.
Yeah, at some point it won't be novel technology, but right now that use of it. But there is something wonderful. I know that if I'm out and I'm drawing in the public, people come by. You know, I'll ride my bike somewhere and I'll take my iPad or a sketchbook and I'll be drawing. And they come by and they're, what are you working? And it is an opportunity for conversation. And I think that's important. Alex, where is the project located that you guys were doing this?
This is the Pompeii 114 project. It's in the southeastern kind of quadrant of the site itself. We kind of have come together for this project specifically. And my background is in Mesoamerican archaeology. That's my specialty. But being a part of this project has been interesting because we speak the same language oftentimes as archaeologists, in that we have the base of data we need to collect. And then I came in on the digital side of things to help develop a unique database that is not only recording information, these 2D drawings and sketches, but also the 3D information as well. But yeah, that's how we kind of came together, and our research questions are kind of surrounding these ideas of social inequality in the past, looking also at how people dealt with garbage and refuse within an urban space, such as Pompeii. And a connection that I have with Pompeii and another project that I work on is that idea of the urban, urbanization, urbanism. Those kinds of research topics are very interesting to me. I work at the site of Monte Alban, which is an early city in the Americas. And it's, contrasting that with stuff going on at Pompeii, that's that kind of sparks that those cross-cultural comparisons that we can make. But yeah, so this is, I've been really enjoying working with these guys who are classical archaeologists and trained and such. But let's come back to this idea of experience bias and drawings and even the stuff that we do. I coming from not having any training and a background in that type of archaeology, I don't see the same things that they do. And so this, sharing through our drawings is actually very helpful in order to be able to see those things.
And I would also add that this is a great project, and that we're bringing together these different perspectives to excavate at Pompeii, because as Alex was saying, me, Jordan, our director, are coming at it as really historians, and classical archaeology is kind of unique in the way it trains people, in that we spend a lot of time in our training actually reading Latin and Greek rather than reading theory about excavation and archaeology. So that's why I think it's so important to bring together these different perspectives. And this is why it was important for me to excavate too outside the ancient Mediterranean in the classical world, because I think we can get, it's easy to kind of get into our own head or things that we think are important or not. And I think, at least in my experience to excavating in South America, it was also just such a different perspective, in that we're not dealing with inscriptions or text or datable coins that can kind of be crutches in a way at Pompeii, which, I mean, it's amazing when we do find these things because they really are helpful for dating, but they can also make us lazy in a way, because it makes sometimes the documentation or the process of excavating less critical for interpretation as it does in some of these other sites.
What I find really interesting with both all of these ideas is Pompeii itself is interesting. And your first research question, looking at social justice issues or what was in the past, I think it's kind of critical. And if I understand a little bit about the history, Pompeii was part of the Roman Empire, but was it a lot of former slaves that had gotten free? Was Pompeii set up differently? Is there some interest of how it was, its relationship to Rome? Help me.
What's interesting about Pompeii is it's interesting to us because of the type of preservation that's available there, right? Based on the nature of the eruption of Vesuvius, it wasn't really that important of a city. So it has an outsized weight on how we think about the ancient world because of that
volcano,
right? Know. Yeah, but in reality, it was like a lot of other cities, in the sense that it's a smaller city. It's in the Bay of Naples area, so it was relatively wealthy in the sense that it's in Campania, which is a really fertile region. So there's a lot of agricultural and viticulture happening in the landscape there. It's located in an interesting location, pretty close to the Sarno River, so it has decent access to the Bay of Naples itself. It's not on the Bay of Naples, but it does have it has a close river port. So it's not super unique in that sense, and it, like in the other city, it has a mix of people in it. You have a lot of free citizens. You do have freed people. So a lot of the funerary monuments, in fact, are set up by freed people. So former slaves that had been freed. Demographically, it looks like, you know, most cities would look like, in the sense that you do have a mix of different types of people, both free and enslaved and freed people. And also, of course, different status groups within those groups, and even socioeconomic status groups within those groups, right? So really, it's representative in a sense that that can let us make conclusions or draw conclusions about what it's like to live in a sort of smaller city in the Italian peninsula in the Roman Empire in the first century CE.
Yeah, but Pompeii is also really... It offers this great window to us, because it does have this early history on its own, basically. It then comes under Samnite control, which is local people in Italy that are kind of along the spine of the Apennines in the south, that then take over and have their own language called Oscan. And we still see Oscan in Pompeii even in the imperial period, which is amazing. And then it eventually becomes a Roman colony, and it is actually punished for going against Rome.
That's what I thought. I mean, it was part of it too.
Yeah, but the people that it doesn't seem that at any point there was a forced influx necessarily of people in Pompeii the way you have some kind of other artificial military settlements or things like that. That being said, there is this kind of inherent diversity in the people of Pompeii. Of course, not everyone's equally represented in our material record, but you know, there was incredibly elite people, and we have these amazing houses, which is something that Pompeii is famous for, these mosaics and wall paintings. But then we have people that are, you know, are sub-elite, that are kind of living this life where they're not enslaved necessarily. They're not the most wealthy, but they're kind of operating in this in-between space, or they're people that were once enslaved, that were manumitted, that gained their freedom, whether by buying it, by their former enslaver passing away and freeing them in their will, and then having to make their own life in their own way in Pompeii. So you see this kind of like rich cross-section of different people in Roman life. But I think something that drew us all to this project is that the focus is not the elite. It's not necessarily the people that we know and understand the best already in Pompeii, but trying to get at these other people that are kind of living more towards the outskirts of town, that aren't operating in these spaces. But this being said, our area doesn't, at least at the time of 79, does not necessarily seem to be a domestic space or a home, but rather seems to have been operating as a restaurant that essentially had indoor and outdoor dining, which is amazing. And it's one of those moments that you're like, wow, these are really advanced people. Like, we should not be thinking of Romans as simple ancient people, when people were going to restaurants and asking, do you want to sit inside or outside, and having like a takeout window kind of on the corner. So but what we're doing is also going before that level and seeing the history of the building and seeing the development of this area, which also not only shows us questions of the urban expansion of Pompeii, but also shows us kind of different, you know, commercial means that were happening in this area and different clues about these people's lives.
Yeah. And you're going to see, and that's what's amazing, what you're describing. You're going to see these intersections between different walks of life when you talk about a restaurant.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
They may not be all eating in it or patrons of it. They may be workers in it, or they may be refuse removers, or they could be anything that could have happened and it would have been frozen. That's the beauty of Pompeii, right? Frozen in a moment in time, which is a little different than other places that have collapsed for different reasons. This one, the magic of this place was it was just pretty quick.
So our project is kind of also unique or interesting among the excavations at Pompeii, in that we're starting from the point of the eruption. So basically all of the eruption stuff has been removed than these past projects that have been happening in Pompeii. And we're going into the earlier history of the city, which is this incredible opportunity to be starting already at this advanced moment of 79 CE, because so many other projects, you know, you spend weeks and weeks and weeks digging to get to anything remotely ancient. So we're starting already from this incredibly important point and then going into the earlier history, finding a lot of stuff from the Republican period, but also Jordan's trench also found some stuff from the Bronze Age. So we're really uncovering this earlier history, but it's not quite as, you know, preserved in amber in the same way that other aspects of Pompeii are.
Right.
Yeah.
Just a reminder, the Da Vinci Pursuit brings together artists, scientists, and members of the community to engage in conversations that explore the intersections between art and science. And we encourage you to explore further at home and in conversation with others any of the ideas we're exploring in today's show, and we'll be right back.
Join us for the University of Indianapolis Faculty Artists Series on Saturday afternoons at 2 o'clock. Host Michael Toulouse brings you his fine commentary as we showcase faculty and visiting artists performing exceptional concerts and recitals from the Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center on the University of Indianapolis campus. That's the University of Indianapolis Faculty Artists Series, Saturdays at 2 p.m. on 88.7 WICR.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Kiesling, and we're having a conversation about the ways in which we can use these new tools of technology to help us with drawing and thinking and visualizing things that we are trying to understand about our past. And Alex, I know that there's a component to this, and you alluded to it earlier, with how it does it engage the community and the public. And you know, that's a big part of Da Vinci Pursuit's mission, is to connect artists, scientists, and community. And so I think it's really great if you talk a little bit about what you were seeing in this process and how that helped.
Yeah, I think with archaeology, we do create these interesting visualizations, whether it's through drawing, we can do this digitally or traditionally, but also in archaeology, we've been doing a lot of this kind of 3D recording using structure for motion or even LiDAR, which is, you know, you're kind of creating a digital twin. It's kind of a hot word these days, digital twin, but basically a digital representation that looks very similar to the actual thing. And what we're able to do with it is engage with the various publics that we work with as archaeologists. So for example, in Quiachapan, Mexico, where I work with a much smaller community, we're oftentimes out, you know, a few hours from town. We'll take a 3D model. We can bring that back and show it to people and ask questions, even the older people in town who may have remembered that site from when they were younger or when they were working in the fields and stuff. You know, being able to see these things allows them to connect with it, because I think as humans, that visual aspect is really important to us, and it kind of, we have this reaction when we do see something, and it can be a digital surrogate, you know, this digital twin, but it could also be a drawing or somebody's sketch to bring something back to life. And I have seen some really impressive stuff, and I don't have the talent of being able to reanimate a space just with a sketch, but there are archaeologists who collaborate with artists a lot to actually do this, to people ruins. You know, we come across ruins all the time, and we're documenting them, we're mapping them. But how do you make that meaningful to somebody? You have to animate it somehow. You have to show them how it may have been used in the past.
So these digital tools, you know, you're talking about the ones you're using, but also then the tools that an artist can use for animation or 3D walkthroughs and concepts as an app, those are borrowed from architecture.
Yes.
Which I think is really interesting. And museum kinds of work. I know as an exhibit designer years ago, we were on the cutting edge of using some technologies to allow a visitor or a potential donor to walk through an exhibit that hadn't been built yet, just to give them a sense of what it was. And so you're talking about that, in a sense, borrowing those tools and now applying it to your particular field.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely borrowing from different fields, and it has been great being able to use these tools to engage with people. For instance, we use nowadays, with especially with the 3D models, gaming, that stuff that people use for game design and 3D modeling. I just visited the Pompeii exhibit at the Museum of Science and Industry up in Chicago. And the way they're able to tell the story by using these amazing visuals that are kind of reconstructions using, you know, computer graphics and game design, but also just the stuff that they're putting there on the walls, which somebody had to sketch, digitally sketch this thing in order to be able to print it and put it into the exhibit. I mean, it's just, it's phenomenal. And they can show what it was like during the time of the explosion of Mount Vesuvius in 79. And they can show, you know, everyday life in Pompeii just by kind of doing that exact thing. And so there's, in museums especially, there's so many people at work there with very different backgrounds and skill sets that kind of tell that story.
Yeah, we're seeing reinterpretations of, I know I went, was lucky right before COVID, we traveled to Paris to see the Da Vinci exhibit, the one that was, you know, a mass of everything from everywhere. But while we were there, we went across and we went over to London. And at the same time, they had the Da Vinci experience happening, which was exactly what you're talking about, which was, you know, huge walkthrough areas of what it might have been like in a studio. And you could see and they mixed it with, it was really cool. They mixed the digital with, you know, his real paint, a set of paints, you know, that were a duplicate. But you felt so much different. It was great to see all the original works that he had in his notebooks, but they were laid out in a normal traditional under glass. When you went to the Da Vinci experience, you were totally into that. And then they even showed the things that were technology to reveal layers behind. So I keep thinking about layers in your work, and layers is so important. Like, what are you finding at what level? So I'm assuming you are measuring down, not just the 2D surface, but you've got to do that. And you also, don't you use plumb bobs and other tools to make sure that you're getting it straight in terms of that?
Yeah, so the plumb bob is pretty key for the measurements that we take on in drawings, right? So that's why it's so collaborative, because somebody has to have the plumb bob and they have to hold it up to the baseline essentially. And so we're taking elevation points, and the model is really powerful for that. The 3D model for the site is really powerful for taking elevations. But yeah, we're measuring in all dimensions.
So your eyes can be thrown off. So I'm assuming that you're also using these measurement tools so that, you know, how all of us, because of our perspective, where we're standing or whatever, it can look distorted. And so you're trying to take, you're talking about the camera getting it wrong. It usually distorts all of us, especially iPhones. And we get, but in this case, you're talking about being able to use that set of kind of ancient measurement tools, right? They aren't new, to be able to get it more accurate so that what you're seeing in your representation and your drawing is better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hadn't actually thought about the plumb bob being an ancient tool, but it is, it really is. It's really old, and it's still used, and it's still really useful for us as we're taking our points.
Yeah. You know, it's actually, it's still used in construction. And we have all these lasers and we have everything, and yet the plumb bob is still a thing that helps us to see level. A couple of other things that you guys really are doing with this. And I wanted to go back to that idea that this way of slowing yourself down, and Mary Evelyn, you were talking a little bit about that, how that's hard because you want to go. So the excitement becomes you see something and then you want to go charge ahead and reveal more of it, right? Especially I would think that's with students, you know, it's so exciting. You want to go. And this way that you have to stop for a moment and you have to document what you just saw without seeing parts of the rest of it, I think is so important. Can you talk a little bit about why that's so important to not reveal all of it at once? Why go down a little bit at a time?
Sure. So, the way that we excavate or operate is under this stratigraphic principle, this idea that deposits soil deposits form and eventually layer on top of each other. So our excavation method is just to remove the one deposit at a time. And you can think of it like a tiramisu or that, you know, chocolate vanilla chocolate pudding, where it's like you just remove the chocolate. And then because that was one deposition, you know, someone at one point, some machine just put all the chocolate at one point, and then another machine put the vanilla. So that's a separate stratigraphic unit, a separate excavation, and et cetera, et cetera. But that also leads to, you know, irregularities in the shape of the trench sometimes, because, you know, some we have a lot of cuts and a lot of fills and a lot of, you know, pits, and Pompeii. So sometimes a trench can take on this irregular shape, or different parts are excavated to different depths. So this is another reason why the drawings are so important, because the drawings are capturing the deposit. They're not capturing necessarily the full trench. So, you know, for instance, one time in my season this year, it's like, if you look at the trench as one photo, it looks like a cohesive whole, but in reality, I'm seeing 4, 5, 6 different deposition events at once that I have to put in a sequence and decide how to excavate based off the order I think they were, the reverse order of how they were deposited. So that's where it gets tricky with the drawings, because we have to determine, sometimes, you know, the SUs can be very clear, but sometimes they can be very, these stratigraphic units, these deposition activities can be very clear. Sometimes they can be incredibly hazy, and you're like, you know, I think it's something different, so I'm going to call it something different just to be safe. But in the drawing, we have to put limits to these things and really define them in a way that you cannot do on a photograph, for instance, or yeah, even in the model sometimes.
Wow, this has been
we love the model. The model.
I love the model.
We use all of these different technologies in very different ways. And they're all incredibly helpful.
Oh, that's great. I want to thank all of you for being with us. It's just been a really great conversation to explore the ways in which, you know, visual art is really helpful to all of you. And, you know, that idea of being able to see by doing the drawing. I appreciate all of you being here. Until next time, I'm Mark Kiesling, reminding you to tune in again when we explore more curiosities from the intersection of art and science.
You've been listening to Intersections, where art and science meet, with your host, Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, and Krista Hoffman Longton, Assistant Dean for Faculty Affairs and Professional Development at the Indiana University School of Medicine. Just a reminder, the Da Vinci Pursuit brings together artists, scientists, and members of the community to engage in conversation that explore the intersections between art and science. We encourage you to explore further in conversation with others. Any of the ideas explored in today's show at www.thedaVinciPursuit.com.